Oh, hi. I was just thinking about that time I walked into a wine store and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I don't know what to do. Actually, that happened probably about 100 times in my life. But I don't do that anymore because I have a great new way of finding great wines at a significant discount from what you would see in a wine store. That is Naked Wines. Makes it so much easier to choose and find great wines. This podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines, and Naked Wines is a wine club that directly connects you to the world's best independent winemakers so you can get world-class wine delivered straight to your door. You can use our code MAJORITY for the code and the password at nakedwines.com and get $100 off your first order. That's 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99. I have had Naked Wines, well, really, I guess over a year ago now. Wait, what? I don't even know what time it is. Thanksgiving. All of our Thanksgiving wines I bought from Naked Wines. And still, like when I have a nice Syrah or a Pinot Grigio, if I'm looking for white, it's spring. And of course, I moved to white, but I wait until after late Memorial Day to do that.
Wow.
No, but no, I'm a red wine guy. But I'm not a big like fruity California wine guy, although they have some great California wines. But they have all sorts of wines, and here's the key. My sister, as you probably know, used to work for wineries in Italy 10 years ago, and she is a huge wine snob. Not only has she enjoyed these Naked Wines, which I got to say, I was shocked because I've never,
And
ever.
at Thanksgiving, that's,
I
you
have
know.
never bought, prior to this, I n never had a bottle of wine. I mean, there's a whole host of things where she says, this is no good. Why are you doing this? But she loved these wines. And the thing that she told me is, or I guess I knew this, she had told me this ages ago, the markup is massive. There are so many middle people, if you will, in between a winery and by the time that it gets to your dinner table or your wine store, that prices get marked up and marked up. And the beautiful thing about Naked Wines is they bring you wine, amazing wines, straight from the winery at up to 60% less than you would pay in a store. Like I say, they cut out all these extras, like middleman markups. And so winemakers can pass those savings on to you without skimping on quality. Naked Wines have been around for over 15 years, backs over 90 independent winemakers around the world to make the wine you love to drink. Get the best wine at the best price with Naked Wines. Now is the time to join the Naked Wines community. Head to nakedwines.com/majority. Click enter voucher. Put in our code majority for both the code and the password, and you get $100 off your first order. That's 6 bottles for only $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off your first 6 bottles at nakedwines.com/majority. Use the code and use majority as the code and password for 6 bottles of wine at $39.99. We'll put this in the podcast and YouTube description. Now, time for the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report. With Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, March 10th, 2026. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the 5-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Kat Abagazela, running for Illinois' 9th congressional district in the Democratic primary, which is happening in a week. Is it March 17th?
I believe so, yeah.
Also joining us, Professor Juan Cole, professor of history at the University of Michigan, founder and editor-in-chief of Informed Comment, author of multiple books, Middle East expert. We'll be talking about the Iran war. Speaking of the Iran war, Trump increasingly incoherent as his advisors beg him to end the war, or at the very least, assuage the markets. Meanwhile, 5 Democrats go around Chuck Schumer and threaten to shut down the Senate over war hearings. First 2 days of Iran war cost at least $5.6 billion just in the bombs alone.
Doge.
Trump delaying a Texas Senate race endorsement to leverage a Senate vote on the SAVE Act. He really, really wants to make it harder to vote because he thinks that's going to help him in the midterms. I don't think so. Speaking of midterms or elections, there's a special election in deep red Georgia today to replace Marjorie Taylor Greene. There are 14 candidates. There's no primary. 3 of them are Democrats. It was a plus 28 Trump district. But who knows? Meanwhile, Mike Johnson facing an even narrower margin as a California representative, Kevin Kiley, now claims he's an independent. He's seen the light.
We rarely get that in reverse.
What's that? That an independent
Republicans going independent?
Oh, well, he's a little nervous about his seat, I suspect.
Oh, yeah.
States ask judge to continue their monopoly claims versus Live Nation after Trump lets them off the hook. I'm sure they didn't pay for that pardon. DOJ's Ed Martin facing ethics charges. And Pete Hegseth spending millions of dollars on lobster tails. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks so much for joining us. It is
Newsday Tuesday.
Yeah.
The lobster tail thing, they really think they're in Mad Men and they don't understand that that is supposed to be a critique of that behavior.
Yes. No. I mean, look, Hegseth realizes he is already gone further than he was ever destined to go.
I know.
And
his
now,
I'm happy to be here energy just oozes off of him anytime he's in front of a camera.
He's playing with the house money now.
Yeah.
That's his attitude. It doesn't matter.
And he gets to cash in at some defense contractor on a
100%.
Board seat where he'll show up 4 times a year, maybe, unless he's had a rough night the night before and get paid $1 million.
Careful if you're at a hotel with him.
Folks are asking me, I think I mentioned this yesterday in the program. Mike Lawler Staffer says, Sam, were you supposed to debate Olivia Rheingold last night? She posted a video on This Morning talking about how she was supposed to. We will play that video. I was supposed to be on CNN last night, but I got bumped because Donald Trump and his war. It was a very ridiculous segment about tweets, no, Instagram likes that Mamdani's wife had made prior to him being mayor. For the most part, I had no problem. I mean, like, I would subscribe to, I think, like 90%, I don't know, 95%, 98%, just like without even any debate. I'm not on Instagram. I don't know how to exactly work it. So it's not a one-to-one comparison. But the idea that this was going to be a cable news segment was even more
prioritizing it in the midst of, and I mean, let alone the fact that Zoran was just the victim of an attempted attack by a bomb that was lobbed at Gracie Mansion.
It's unclear if he was the attempted victim. It's unclear.
Okay. But well, there were Islamophobic protests outside that were the impetus for said bomb. So either way, there's like a height of bigotry. Hatred around him that
are we live right now or no?
It looks like reconnection successful.
Okay. So we're back on. We had a little bit of a hiccup. If for whatever reason you're not seeing the show, refresh. But of course you wouldn't know to do that because technical troubles abound. But let's get to this. Donald Trump and the, you know, I think the biggest story is not that I got bumped from CNN last night. Donald Trump went on the television program yesterday, or I should say, started to give updates on the Iran war. He seemed to have gone to like two different places yesterday. But the bottom line is he was floating towards the end of the day that he felt like the Iran war was done. Now, I'm quite convinced that he's trying to figure a way out of it. We had talked about this yesterday. I think we had even played I can't remember his spokesperson's name now.
Levitt,
Caroline Levitt, saying, well, Donald Trump will decide when they have unconditionally surrendered, regardless of what they say. He decides whether it's an unconditional surrender. Which suggested to us that this is a guy looking for an exit ramp. And certainly he's getting a lot more pressure as the price of oil goes. I don't know what they thought was going to happen. We'll talk to Professor Juan Cole about this.
But it was at $120 a barrel to start Monday. And then when Trump goes on and filibusters about how he wants to end the war, he says at least, although their actions don't seem to match that rhetoric, then it fell to $90. So the question is how much is this psychopath just going out there and trying to manipulate the market to make himself look better and still engaging in these bloodthirsty war crimes whenever he wants to the next morning?
I mean, my guess is that they want to get out. They realize this is going to be a problem, and they're trying to figure out how to get out of this situation because, and we'll talk more about this with Professor Cole, it's unclear that Iran at this point thinks it's in their best interest to disengage because, but we'll, you know, like I say, we will talk to Juan Cole about that. But here is Donald Trump, and this is fascinating. First off, note that his energy was incredibly low during this. But aside from that, he sort of gives up the ghost pretty quick. But let's play this first time he's asked this question. It's in regards to the bombing of a school, elementary school in Tehran, where at least 100 school children were killed and approximately 175 people in total were killed by the United States. And here's Donald Trump trying to dance around that for a moment. This number.
Yeah. Please, go ahead.
There's footage that shows that an American missile strike and a Tomahawk missile likely destroyed that Iranian girls' school. So will the Americans, will the U.S. accept any responsibility?
Well, I haven't seen it, and I will say that the Tomahawk, which is one of the most powerful weapons around, is used by, you know, is sold and used by other countries, you know that. And whether it's Iran, who also has some tomahawks, I wish they had more, but whether it's Iran or somebody else, the fact that a tomahawk is very generic. It's sold to other countries, but that's being investigated right now.
Yeah, other countries have tomahawks. Are other countries bombing Iran? But, you know, it is very in keeping with Trump to admire the power of the weapon used to inflict pain and harm and death upon little girls. Seems to be something that he really enjoys.
Iran doesn't have tomahawks, right?
Okay. They do not have tomahawk missiles unless we have been secretly selling them to Iran. But the point being that, like, it's obviously conceivable that we have sold Tomahawks to other countries. But, for instance, like Australia or United, Britain, Japan and Netherlands, I believe, are other. But none of these people are engaged in a bombing campaign against Iran. And
what if they were just generics, like when you get the CVS brand of your of Band-Aids?
We do a lot of white label Tomahawks, so they become other types of...
I could barely muster a joke.
Jared, who are you selling those to?
Slingshots. Some people market them as slingshots. We call them Tomahawks.
Yeah.
Catapults. Some people sell them as catapults.
Mm-hmm.
A reporter decided to do a follow-up question and note that the reporter was a white male. So the question gets answered.
But credit here. This is guys from the New York Times, Sean McCreesh. And this is perhaps, besides Caitlin Collins, like the only good question I've seen like posed to Donald Trump in recent weeks and months.
You just suggested that Iran somehow got its hands on a Tomahawk and bombed its own elementary school on the first day of the war. But you're the only person in your government saying this. Even your defense secretary wouldn't say that when he was asked, standing over your shoulder on your plane on Saturday. Why are you the only person saying this?
Because I just don't know enough about it. I think it's something that I was told is under investigation. But Tomahawks are used by others, as you know. Numerous other nations have Tomahawks. They buy them from us. But I will certainly, whatever the report shows, I'm willing to live with that report.
Well, I bet you are.
Yeah.
You know, there's nobody, as the reporter asked, no Republicans, it seems like, not even his own here. This is John Kennedy, Republican of Louisiana. This was his quote. "It was terrible. We made a mistake. Other countries do that sort of thing intentionally, like Russia." Interesting. "We would never do that intentionally. I think the department is investigating it now, and I'm sorry. I'm just so sorry it happened. It was a mistake." Spare me your pearl-clutching, Kennedy, as you vote to send endless arms to Israel, because that would be the more prescient example here. We civilized folk are above this kind of thing. No. We just outsource it to Israel and subcontract our child killing out to them. This time this was us. We just did it more directly because the president got his rocks off about killing and hurting little girls again. Seems to be a theme.
I don't know anything about it. But to the extent that I do, I'll blame other people. I don't know. It was obvious on day one what had happened. And just the idea that it gets strung out this long is in and of itself a victory for them. Because it is meant to essentially amateurize the horrors that we've created. When we look at Israel, they're doing the same thing, too, with Israel now. Where Israel supposedly was the ones who blew up these refinery and depots outside of Tehran that have essentially doomed millions of people to the potential for new cancers and diseases as petroleum rains down upon them. And they blame Israel, but...
I just quickly, one more point. Without prosecuting the Bush war criminals, this is how what we've enabled. This is what we've wrought.
All right, we got to take a in a moment. We'll be talking to Kat Abugzella and Professor Juan Cole. First, couple words from our sponsors. One is from Delete Me. It's a company that I've been using for at least 10 years. Delete Me makes it easy, quick, and safe to remove your personal data online at a time when surveillance and data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. Delete Me does all the hard work of wiping you and your family's personal information from data broker websites. I've been using Delete Me for 10 years, obviously doing this job. I don't want all my personal information floating around. Delete Me's great. They send you like a monthly digest of basically what they found, where they found it, and what they deleted, because you got to keep on it because the data brokers keep reconstituting your information. But the protection's not just for people who do stuff like this. The way that hackers work, they find information on the dark web. They combine it with information they can buy for a couple of bucks at a data broker. Then they steal your identity. Or they buy stuff from a data broker. They find out your cousin's name, your parents' name, your phone number, some past addresses. They send you an email, and that's how they do their phishing scams. This is a great way to protect yourself. And also, frankly, a great way to protect maybe some of your elder parents. You guys are all too young for this, and I'm not making any aspersions, but when your parents get to be a certain age, you want to basically wall stuff off, if you know what I'm talking about. Data brokers make a profit off your data. Your data is a commodity. Anyone on the web can buy your private details. This can lead to identity theft, like I said, phishing attempts, and harassment. But now you can protect your privacy with Delete Me. What do data brokers do? They get your name, your contact information, sometimes social security number, your home address, and even information about your family members could all be compiled by these data brokers and sold online. Thanks to Delete Me for sponsoring the Majority Report. Take control of your data. Keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special discount for our listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go and join DeleteMe.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout. The only way to get 20% off, go to joindeleteme.com/majority. Enter code majority at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/majority. Code is majority. Also, sponsoring the program today, Cozy Earth. What is comfort that carries you from morning to night feel like? Cozy Earth crafts every piece with care, from soft, supportive socks for your steps through the day to breathable comforters that help you rest deeply at night. Every detail is intentional, so your every day feels quietly elevated. In fact, this is literally my experience. I am right now wearing a pair of Cozy Earth socks.
Wow.
I showed them to Brian.
He made me get up and go look at his socks.
I have a lace shoe on now. But they're sharp looking too, though, aren't they?
They are nice.
Like half maroon, half gold.
University of Minnesota colors.
Yeah. Well, I'm not concerned about that. But
Gophers.
Boston College.
Boston College. Yeah, I'm not a fan of Boston College, too. I'm more of a Holy Cross guy, but that's not the point. They're incredibly soft. I was telling Brian, these socks do not get into my drawer. They are in constant, as soon as I wash them and fold them, I leave them on my bed and I wear them next. They're like, they're in that type of cycle. There's no downtime for these
The child socks. Cycle.
It's sort of, it's maybe a little bit, but I mean, I really like these socks. They're the first ones I wear when I do my laundry. And of course I have Cozy Earth sheets. I have Cozy Earth comforter. I have my favorite hoodie is a Cozy Earth hoodie. I got the joggers. I don't wear the joggers that much, you know, because I get into a jag with my pants. But when I need a jogger, I wear those joggers. But I wear the hoodie is amazing. The joggers are amazing, too. But I just – and the socks, obviously, as you can tell, I am in love with my Cozy Earth socks. I may go all Cozy Earth socks.
Nice.
I may even like. I rarely will get rid of socks unless they're they got a hole in them. But I want to go Cozy Earth. Crafted with intention to support. Oh, those are the comforters. Crafted with intention to support deeper rest. Designed with naturally breathable temperature regulating materials. These luxuriously soft comforters help your body settle, cool, and calm, gently supported through the night. And Cozy Earth purchases are risk free. They have a 100-night sleep trial. Try them out. If you don't love them, return them hassle-free. 10-year warranty, because once you feel this level of comfort, you want it to last a decade. Thanks to Cozy Earth for sponsoring this episode. And for my socks, my comforter, my sheets. Discover how care in every detail transforms simple routines into moments of true comfort and ease. Head to CozyEarth.com. Use code MajorityReport for up to 20% off. That's code MajorityReport. For up to 20% off. And if you get a post-purchase survey, be sure to mention you heard about Cozy Earth right here. Experience the craft behind the comfort. Make every day feel intentional. Quick break when we come back. Kat Abugzala running for Illinois' 9th Congressional District. We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Viglin on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Kat Abouzela, running for Illinois' 9th congressional district in a primary, Kat, that has how many Democratic candidates vying for this?
16.
Wow.
I love the laughing in the background. Yeah.
No, that's insane. Why so many candidates? Do you have an idea? Like,
I mean, I love it. It's a competitive primary. I was the first one to launch and the only one to launch before the incumbent announced her retirement. And I actually said, because there hasn't been a competitive primary in this district since before I was born, I was like, hey, if anyone wants to run, I will help you file the FEC paperwork. No one in this race took me up on it, but I am very glad that we have a competitive primary. And right now there are three highest polling candidates. I am in a close second, single digits from first. And of those three, I'm the only one that hasn't met with or submitted a position paper to AIPAC, which I thought was a low bar, but apparently not.
Okay. Well, that is, that's impressive that there, I mean, it's impressive to me that there are candidates, Democratic primary candidates who are sort of like openly courting AIPAC. That seems nuts to me at this stage.
Yeah, it really is. And the one who is backed by AIPAC, they just released their second attack ad against me, and it's just as dumb as the first one. But the other candidate who is now speaking out against AIPAC, which, great, that's awesome, claims that he met with them because he meets with everyone, even people he disagrees with. And personally, I don't think AIPAC is someone you should meet with, even if it is a differing position. Genocide and manipulating elections isn't a differing position. That is where I draw the line, at least.
Well, are you relying on small dollar donations, right? That's your campaign is based on that?
Yep, we are the only campaign in this race to be funded by majority small dollar donations.
Which is interesting because, you know, you see how some of these candidates, it's almost like once they get the AIPAC tag, they become so politically toxic that they can't fundraise in another way. So then they become more reliant on AIPAC. We're seeing this with Haley Stevens in Michigan, but I'd imagine that that's something that's happening in your race as well.
Definitely. And it's kind of crazy because there are people across the country that are, you know, nice people, maybe did good work before taking AIPAC support, but AIPAC knows it's toxic, which is why it operates now with dark money PACs. And it's made these candidates toxic as well. If they don't win, then that's always going to be a stain on their career.
How did they run ads against you? What were the nature of the ads? Because we know that they're running, you know, in New Jersey 11, for example, they funded an ad campaign hitting Malinowski from the left, and it ended up benefiting the actual left-wing candidate in the race.
Yeah, so they started attacking the person that's currently in first, to single digits between us, doing similarly to what happened in New Jersey 11, attacking him for not being pro-Israel enough, despite saying that he'd fund the Iron Dome, that he supports anti-BDS legislation at the federal level. And then I think in the past couple weeks, they've realized, oh shit, I'm going to win this thing. So they first released an ad that was AI generated that quoted my high school newspaper twice. And the whole idea was, who is Kat Abouzela? And the new ad that they released, which they released in the same text thread as their other dark money pack, because AIPAC's getting sloppy, is about how I'm a fake that takes money from Saudi arms dealers and billionaires and Republicans, which, as far as the last two, quite an allegation for AIPAC to make. Also wrong.
Yes.
Let's get to endorsements. I mean, we're at the stage of the election. You're a week out from the election. You are in the top three, essentially, in all the polling that exists at this point. Is there any sense that there's going to be a coalescing? There are other progressive candidates in this race. Is there going to be a coalescing from your perspective? Because this is an opportunity to get a seat and sort of move that seat to the left, for lack of a better way of expressing this. versus two people who are out there trying to, you know, court AIPAC in some fashion. What's your sense about that? Or do you have an opinion on that or what?
Yeah, so we're really lucky that we have multiple progressives in our race, but we don't have ranked choice voting here. We don't even have a runoff. So someone could win this race with 20%. And that means that essentially there are three candidates, the ones that we've been talking about, that are the most viable. Of course, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think any vote is wasted. I always encourage people to vote for the candidate that they most support. But no, I don't think any coalescing will happen. I'll say on my side for organizations like that I've been endorsed by in my application, I did commit to dropping out if it seemed like we didn't have a likely path to victory. But I think that everyone has the right to run for office, especially if they've fulfilled all the requirements. I mean, you go out there, you get those signatures, you're on the ballot.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those endorsements. You got quite a few of them from sort of progressive organizations. Tell us about a couple of them.
So I've been endorsed by Justice Democrats. That one was pretty recently, as well as PALPAC, which is the Peace, Accountability, and Leadership PAC in response to AIPAC. I was one of, I believe, their first non-incumbent endorsement, which is really exciting. I've been endorsed by Congressman Ro Khanna, by, if not now, Chicago, by the Sunrise Movement, both Chicago and national. The Nurses Union here, the Justice Coalition, State Representative Abdel Nasser Rashid. A lot of people, this race has so many folks in it and it's gotten so messy that there's kind of this sense of, I don't want to touch that race with a 10-foot pole. But we're very proud of the coalition that we have built, especially as a grassroots campaign.
Well, I had read on your site that your district is one of the more Jewish districts in the country, which I hadn't realized. I think there is this false notion from the national press, and we saw this in Zoran Mamdani's race, that in some way criticizing Israel's genocide is a liability with Jewish voters. What have you found in your kind of stance on this and how the people in your district or potential district have responded?
Yeah, that's absolutely not the case. You know, I'm, despite everything about how I look, I'm Palestinian American. I have been advocating against this genocide for years. I've been advocating for Palestinian statehood essentially my entire life. And I remember when I launched my campaign, people saying that there is no way anyone would ever vote for me because there is such a large Jewish population here. In fact, Skokie, which is in the district, had the largest proportion of Holocaust survivors outside of Israel after the Holocaust. And I personally find that idea of they would never vote for a Palestinian so offensive, especially when Jewish people have consistently been the greatest allies in fighting for Palestinian liberation. Our lives and our futures are inextricable from each other. And the idea that just because you are Jewish, you have to support the actions of the state of Israel or that they're one and the same is so offensive. And most people don't support what is happening in Gaza or the West Bank.
Give us a sense of, like, in the event that you do win, and we should say this is a very blue district, the winner of the Democratic primary is going to end up being the congressperson from this district. Where do you see yourself concentrating? I mean, members enter into Congress. There are committee assignments that they're looking for because they want to focus on a specific issue area. What would be yours?
So I am a researcher and journalist who covers the far right. I worked for Media Matters, Mother Jones, Ateo News. And part of why I ran is because I was like, well, they're going to do something. Democrats are going to do something after Trump is reelected. And then they didn't. So first off, it's about stalling this president's agenda, however possible, working towards impeachment, conviction, and removal, the abolition and prosecution of ICE, and truly stalling this agenda however we can. We have to be more creative, whether it's in exploiting parliamentary procedure or using our resources in a different way. Like, our campaign uses our office as a mutual aid hub. The Democratic Party is a massive donor base, and we could be fulfilling people's material needs right now and also showing through our actions our values, especially when people are so disillusioned in politics rather than just making a bunch of promises and talking like Gavin Newsom. Also, from March 18th till Election Day in November, like you said, this is a very Democratic district. And so if we're able to win this, we're going to be using our resources and our platform to get progressives elected nationwide.
Lastly, I know that there's a DSA endorsed candidate in your race, but as you're saying, your polling kind of puts you in the position where of the lefty candidates, you're the one most likely to pull this off. What is your position on DSA, despite not getting that endorsement? And do you feel that you could kind of embrace certain at least tactics from DSA or have alignment on policies with DSA going forward?
Yeah, first off, I am a dues-paying member of DSA. I have been for my entire adult life. I should say that there are actually, I don't believe there is a DSA-endorsed candidate in my race. There was a recommended candidate for a chapter that was in the farther suburbs, which still fantastic for that candidate. We did not pursue the DSA endorsement because I believe that was happening around our indictment. Things have been crazy over here. But I am a Democratic Socialist. I'm a dues-paying DSA member, and I have been for my entire adult life.
We should say the indictment was not on one in which I think you could take some pride in.
I'm actually I was the last time I was supposed to come on here was after my arraignment.
Yes,
and then that was a little crazy. So I've been indicted for protesting ICE. My trial is May 26th. If anyone is free, it'll be really, really stupid. But yeah, I mean, there's a reason this administration is coming after me and why I and some of the most effective critics of this administration have been indicted. And it's because everyone I used to report on and win against, Stephen Miller, Elon Musk, Tom Homan, they run our country now. They know me and they don't want me in power.
I want to ask this. I have watched the Breaking Points interview you did with Crystal Ball and Ryan Grimm regarding a leaked email that from an advisor to you who has since left the campaign regarding characterizing you as an interventionist to the extent that we know what that means. I'm not sure. And also regarding your perspective on Taiwan, I would encourage people if they're really invested in this to go into that interview because it was about as in depth of a candidate interview I've seen on a very specific topic. But broadly speaking, just give us the broader answer for that for those people who may be afraid that you are going to lead a massive campaign in the House to perhaps to get into a war with China.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, war with any country and especially China is the last thing that I want. When I talk about dropping strategic ambiguity, specifically militarily, it's because we have a madman as the president. And if we have a president who is even somewhat predictable, as pretty much all of them since Nixon in one way or another have been, I wouldn't dream of touching it. But I also firmly believe in self-determination. And if people disagree with me on this, that is fine. But this is, especially as a Palestinian person, extremely important to me. It's why I also don't believe in touching the One China policy politically. If the people of Taiwan democratically vote for reunification, we should absolutely support that. This stance that I have is not for China as a boogeyman or for control of Taiwan. This is specifically because of self-determination. Once again, if you disagree with that, that is your stance, but that's important to me. And this is an act for deterrence. We need to be investing in diplomacy, and we also need to be looking at China as a trade and innovation partner. But that's not possible with Republicans where they are now. And it's also not possible when any country is doing imperialism. That includes the United States, but it also includes Israel. It includes China. It includes Russia. Imperialism and wars of aggression are bad, and I feel very strongly about that.
Got a week left, literally a week before the voting starts, or I should say, is there early voting in this district?
There is early voting, and we also have same-day voter registration here. So nice. You can take your ID and a piece of mail that confirms your address on there and go to the polls. They will register you. They will give you a ballot. A lot of cases, you don't even have to do a provisional ballot, so your ballot can be counted right then. Election Day is March 17th. If you want to know more, if you live in the area, this district goes from uptown Chicago up to Evanston, west to Skokie, and then all the way to Algonquin and Crystal Lake. It's gerrymandered to hell. You can go to catforillinois.com/vote. If you live in Illinois, please sign up for one of our Reach trainings, which is an app that essentially cross-references your contacts with voter data so you can contact people you know to let them know to vote if they're in the area. You can do that at catforillinois.com/events or sign up for phone banking or door knocking. And then finally, we need people to donate so we can keep up with the AIPAC ads that they have been blasting across platforms. If you can donate any amount at catforillinois.com, that would be fantastic. With over 60,000 donors, our average donation is still just $32.
I'm looking at the polling. There's a public policy polling from February 20th. There's an impact research from earlier in the month of February. You are in second place with essentially the same in both those polls. The guy who is leading BIS has dropped. Essentially, like, this is the race. There's if folks want to get a progressive in there that's been endorsed by Justice Democrats, the Sunrise Movement, the Teachers Union, et cetera. Nurses Union. This is an opportunity. 7 days to go. I imagine, you know, people knocking on doors is going to be hugely important in a race where you have so many candidates who are running.
So many, and we could use any help we can. And like, here's the thing, we are going to help elect progressives all across the country. And all of those polls, no matter what, I mean, no one knows what's going to happen in this race because there are so many variables, mainly that we are targeting everyone, not just likely primary voters, which skew older, whiter, affluent. We have a lot of young people in our coalition, a lot of immigrants, a lot of poor people. I'm a renter myself. Our own polling was the only one to include categories for renting. We need everyone, and we can win this thing.
And I just gotta say, I didn't know that you were doing the live streams in place of calling hours for donations. We have an IM about that from Sean from PA saying it's a really good idea.
Thank you. Just
something to, I think, for other candidates to note as like the people are trying to adapt to the digital age, that could be a really interesting way to get people engaged. So.
And everyone
no one's picking
up
their phone when they see a number that does not come up as a contact. So
right. And it sucks to constantly call rich people and beg for money, which is what every candidate in the history of America has had to do. So we play Hades too instead.
Kate Abagzella, we will put a link to Catforillinois.com,
F-O-R.
Illinois.com. All right, we'll put a link up there. Good luck.
Thank you so much, guys. Great to see you.
Thanks so much,
thanks
Pat.
For joining us.
Good luck.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Professor Juan Cole, professor of history at University of Michigan, founder and editor-in-chief of Informed Comment. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. It's a real pleasure to welcome back to the program Professor Juan Cole, professor of history and Middle East studies at University of Michigan, founder and editor in chief of Informed Comment at informedcomment.com. Professor, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Sam. It's great to see you.
Give us a sense. I mean, what I really want to get to is, you know, sort of like what's going on in within Iran on some level, because I have to say, I mean, you and I had dozens of conversations about the Iraq war over the years, you know, starting, you know, over 20 years ago now. And there was a massive buildup. There was, you know, like a wind up, I should say, to the war. There were multiple countries involved across the globe. There was, granted, embedded reporters in Iraq. So and there was occasionally independent reporters. We're just not getting like the same level of information. I guess CNN has folks in Tehran, but we're not getting information outside of Israel. It's unclear. It seems much harder to access what's going on.
Big time. Well, I think, you know, I can remember, Sam, when we first started talking, there were these alarmist reports that all of our media was controlled by 8 corporations.
Yes.
I think we may be going towards one, and we've become more and more of an oligarchy, both with regard to socioeconomic affairs, but also with regard to media. So the major, even the when we started talking, Facebook didn't yet exist, and Twitter now has become X. They have algorithms that suppress things that they don't like, they suppress news. They suppress controversial postings. So the media landscape is very murky. And, you know, back in Iraq war days, I could go on the internet and look at local Iraqi newspapers from towns in Iraq. I find it difficult to do that in Iran because they're also highly controlled. So it is a very different situation, but I think it's because our politics have shifted so heavily towards oligarchy.
That's fascinating. And I was hoping that you would still have access to those things, frankly.
I wanted to mention this because we were right on the topic here. We had meant to ask you about this, how the satellite company Planet is essentially delaying its imagery out of the Middle East by 14 days. This is a stark change in, I sent this in our chat. This is a stark change from how they'd approach the war in Ukraine, where that satellite imagery was more readily available. I'm wondering what you take from this announcement, because this also comes as the Israelis are heavily censoring information about the efficacy of Iranian strikes within Israel.
Well, I don't know the details of that satellite delay. But it certainly makes things murkier, and probably deliberately so. You know, Israel is not actually a democracy and has very heavy military censorship. Sometimes newspapers appear with blanks in the front page because the military censors didn't let the news through. So we don't know, I don't think, very much about what's actually going on the ground in Israel. There are a few people like Ori Goldman have tweeted out when they're very heavily hit, but you would be arrested if you showed up with your iPhone trying to take a picture of the damage in the aftermath of an Iranian strike in Israel. So we don't know very much about that front. Lebanon, we know more about because the Lebanese are natural anarchists, and they are sending out reports. But and Iran itself, of course, is a autocratic government, and we don't know everything that's happening there. So it's very murky. But I mean, I think Emma, to your point, the overall picture of what's going on is not so hard to discern. The United States and Israel are bombing the bejesus out of Iran. They are attempting to inflict attrition on Iranian drone and missile launchers in order to make the country helpless. And they haven't succeeded. And moreover, Iran has figured out it may be a kind of self-defeating strategy, but also an effective one of not only hitting at Israel or at U.S. bases, but of interfering with the commerce in petroleum and gas that comes out of the Persian Gulf, which could throw the whole world into a deep recession.
All right, I want to get to that. Let's tick down this. Let's assume that it is the case. I mean, we can see images. Obviously, we've seen images of like the petroleum rain. I don't know how else to describe it. Which God knows the impact it's going to have on those 10 million people living in Tehran. I mean, I just in terms of like cancers down the road and whatnot. But based upon your understanding of Iran, how effective, it seems almost impossible to glean what the Trump administration's goals are here. Israel, it seems a little bit more possible that they're looking for some type of like balkanization or internal strife in Iran, which would theoretically preoccupy them for who knows how long. What are the chances of that? I mean, explain to us the difference between like the efficacy of the Iranian revolution in terms of creating a stable, low to the ground regime, as opposed to what we would see in perhaps Latin American countries where you have like sort of strong men come in and fall and military coups.
Yeah, Iran experienced a revolution in 1978-79, which social scientists find that's extremely important for the subsequent unfoldment of politics. It was a mass revolution. And in the aftermath, they established a parliament which has representatives from all over the country. And in parliament, they fight for their districts. So there's been enormous spread of education, rural schools, electrification, women's literacy has more than doubled. The whole country's literacy is quite high now. It is a mobilized population. And for all the discontents with this government, it's not like a one-man dictatorship. There are regime supporters who form popular militias on the streets of all the cities in the country. And there's a lot of internal spying and so forth, but there's also an ability to mobilize people. There are layers to this thing. So, the Israelis think in ethnic terms, and they hope to break Iran up ethnically as they hoped to break Iraq up ethnically. But 90% of the country is Shiite, it's a little unlikely that appealing to these small Sunni ethnicities like the Kurds or the Baluch is going to do more than cause some local turbulence of a minor sort. And doing that also brings in the neighbors, because Turkey is not going to be happy with a Kurdish resurgence in Iran. And Pakistan is petrified of the Baluch rising up, because they'll rise up on both sides of the borders. So all you're doing is giving Iran allies if you take that tack.
Can you talk more?
I just want to just follow up on this one more question. We should say that the regime is obviously very brutal. I mean, they've just killed anywhere from like, I don't know, it seems 4,000 to 10,000 people in those most recent protests. But what would do you... Do we have a sense of how many people are finding have bought into the sort of like the theocratic revolution that took place there?
Opinion polling, such as it is, because it's difficult to do in an autocratic state, suggests that the regime's hardcore supporters are as few as 15%. People are not generally enthusiastic about this government. And we saw in mid-January masses of people in the streets. It looked like it was going towards a 1978-style revolution. And as you say, it was viciously repressed with very high casualties. They shot into crowds. But now, you know, things have changed all around, because if you can't come into the streets if you're afraid of being bombed. The steam has been taken out of that movement. And moreover, then your neighbors will look at you and say, what are you, on the side of the Israelis? And so I think, you know, this Israeli and Trump intervention in Iran has squelched what was becoming a movement, quite unfortunately so. It probably has strengthened the regime.
I want to just go back to what you were saying about Turkey, because Turkey is a NATO member and Israel has been threatening them openly. And then you also have, of course, the relationships with the GRCC countries in the United States that are, financial in nature, perhaps less inextricable than our relationship with Israel, obviously. But Trump's financial involvement in the GRCC countries, I think, is also important here, because it appears like Iran's strategy is directed towards perhaps targeting them, because they know that they'll have more, it's more bang for their buck with drone attacks on GRCC countries than lobbing missiles into the Iron Dome that are most likely going to get intercepted. So could you expand on both Iran's relationship with Turkey and then also the other Gulf countries and how that changes the dynamic here?
Turkey, as you say, is a NATO member. And they have used their levers in NATO to marginalize Israel. So because of the Gaza war, NATO is not conducting joint military exercises with Israel any longer, on the grounds that Israel has violated the laws of war and is not a suitable partner. And the Israelis are furious about Turkey's access to the inner workings of Brussels and the way it can marginalize them. They would very much like to take Turkey down a peg. I think it's very difficult for them to do that, because NATO has Article 5. An attack on one is an attack on all. If the Israelis attack Turkey, I think it will bring in at least some of Europe against Israel. The Israelis talk big. The cabinet members, not marginal people with real power, they'll talk about, eventually we may take Damascus, or we have to take Turkey down a peg. And Turkey is a huge country compared to Israel. There's 7 million Jews in Israel. They're nearly 90 million Turks. And they have an excellent military, high-powered weapons and jets, and the only thing they don't have is a nuclear weapon, but then they have an American nuclear umbrella. So I wouldn't pay too much attention to what the Israelis say about Turkey. It's just it's threats, and the same thing can be said about Erdogan's empty threats against Israel from Turkey's side. But with regard to
the Gulf countries, I mixed up IRGC, and I meant to say GCC, the Gulf countries, just clarifying that. Yes.
The Gulf Cooperation Council. Yep. The Gulf Cooperation Council is the Arab oil monarchies. They're largely, though they're Sunni, and they have given the United States bases to protect themselves. Iran has been hitting those bases. And in particular, it has been hitting radar and communications technology. They've been able to take out. I'm an army brat, so I take no pleasure in saying this. I hope our guys are safe, but the Iranians have hit very expensive hundreds of millions of dollars worth of radar and other communications technology on these bases in places like Kuwait in order to prevent the Americans from protecting Israel from Iranian missiles and drones. And they've been very effective at it. They have also hit hotels and airports and oil facilities in Bahrain and so forth. So it hasn't only been a matter of targeting the Americans the way the Iranians portray it. They've also tried to inflict some damage on civil society in the Gulf countries. But the main thing they've done is that the Gulf Arab states live on oil and gas. I mean, 20% of the world's supply of oil and 20% of liquefied natural gas comes out of the Gulf. People in America don't seem to understand how vulnerable we all are to this. It has been cut off effectively. Qatar, they don't have a place to store all this stuff. So if they can't export it, they have to stop exporting it. So the Gulf countries have been drawn into this by Iran as a way of punishing the United States, and it's going to work. We will be punished.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this. I mean, you know, from what I've read, we're already 2 months out. If the war was to stop today, it would take at least 2 months for this to work its way through the system. Like you say, you've got if you can't export the oil, you certainly can't store it in many of these facilities. You can store it to a certain extent, but also this becomes a vulnerability, I would imagine, at one point. And so how much, aside from like what this country and perhaps the world is going to suffer from an economic standpoint, which is just going to increase both in terms of fuel and in terms of food, because a couple of key elements of fertilizer is produced in this region. What's going to happen? Like, let's say this was to end tomorrow. And certainly it feels like Trump sort of is starting to realize, like, I may have gone in over my head here, and there may be more problems than I thought this was going to be. But be that as it may, if it was to stop tomorrow, what is your sense of like how these GCC countries, are they going to say, you know what, maybe we shouldn't have these U.S. bases here? Like this, if the idea is that we were going to get protected, I mean, I think, you know, like at one point their protection came from their own people. But it seems like they've sort of like figured that out. Like, we're just going to have to disperse enough of the benefits to everybody so that as a regime, we're secure. Then it became we're being protected from Iran. They clearly have basically marked themselves as a target because of this. So what happens? Are we going to see as much like, I don't know, the UAE having comedy shows or whatever? Like is it, are we going to see a disinvestment?
Well, the Dubai, I think, is what you're referring to with the comedy shows and the nice hotels. And I've been to Dubai. It's a wonderful place, and I really regret the damage being inflicted on it. But it's been economically destroyed. It's a finance hub, and it depends on expat labor. It depends on an illusion of security. I don't know. This is a heavy blow to it. I mean, it has had heavy blows before. The 2008 meltdown hurt it, but how it comes back from this is not clear to me. So there may be permanent damage to the Gulf over this. I don't know what they're going to do about security going forward. There are two things to say. First of all, Iran is not going to relent until it gets a reset on its security. It's not going to put up with, it's not Gaza. The Israelis have this cynical phrase. They talk about mowing the grass. They used to bomb Gaza every once in a while. Iran is not going to put up with that. They're a big country and not a poor one. They have capabilities which they're demonstrating. So they want to fight this to a point where everybody understands, you mess with us, and you can't drive your car. you mess with us and you can't get in your car and go shopping for groceries. You can't go in your get in your car and go visit your aunt. You mess with us and your way of life is over. They want that message to get through. So they're not going to stand down until they get an understanding of that sort. The Gulf, as you say, has put all of its eggs in the American basket. Some other countries have not, like Djibouti, the small port on the Red Sea. They gave the Chinese a base, along with the British and the Americans. And you may see something like that, that they may diversify their security arrangements. This whole thing could be an enormous boondoggle for the United States and a big boon for China.
Well, the fact that China already brokered these talks between the Iranians and the Saudis a few years back is really important to note here. The other part is how this benefits, I think, both Russia and China, because now you have these Asian countries that are going to be desperate for energy, for oil. They can go to Putin and he can charge them an inflated price. And on the China front, this gives them a partner in the global hegemon, potentially eventually, or superpower that is going to, perhaps say, we'll have your back in the way the Americans don't. They're just all in bed with the Israelis.
Oh, I guarantee you that at embassies in the Gulf, both the Russians and the Chinese are telling the people that the Americans are fickle and they're not really supporting you and they got you in all this trouble. You should come with us now. I heard a Russian diplomat say these things to the Qataris nearly a decade ago already then. But it fell on deaf ears at that point. That's right, Emma. The other thing to say, though, is that China has been diversifying its energy. So 53% of new automobile sales in China last year were electric. The energy analysts suspect that China has reached peak oil, that every year from here on in it will use less. This coming oil shock, because we haven't seen the real shock yet. The coming oil shock is a good argument for them to accelerate that process. They've got a program of buying up clunkers the way Obama did here. So they're trying to get the heavy gasoline using vehicles off the streets. And they've reduced their subsidies for the electric vehicles because it was costing the government a lot of money, but they may put them back or there may be other kinds of incentives. But I expect the Chinese to go even more heavily towards electrification of transport. Most oil is used for transport. So if China goes in this direction, it takes other countries with it. The Thais and the Indonesians and others are looking at these EVs, and the Chinese EV technology is so far ahead of what
BYD, is that what it is? Those things go 500 miles on a charge, and they are significantly less expensive than your average U.S. car. And they're going to be making them in Canada soon, too, right? I mean, within a couple of years. I mean, so, I'm already thinking, like, how do I get over to Canada and smuggle one of those in? But I want to get back to what you had said earlier in terms of Iran. This is the thing that I don't think has seemed to have seeped into American consciousness, that we are at the point right now where we do not control the timeline of the it's harder to tell because we haven't seen images coming out of Tel Aviv just, very sporadically. And the U.S. has, the U.S. population has no idea of like what's going on in the Gulf. I mean, it took 3 years before people knew, I think, in Iraq that there were Sunni and Shia Muslims. And we're all waiting to see if Donald Trump decides to end the bombing. But what you're saying is that Iran is basically dictating the timetable of this. from your perspective, like how much pain, like what are the pain thresholds that they can A, impose on the United States and Israel, and I guess to a certain extent, the rest of the world? And where do you think that they'll decide, like, that's enough?
Yeah, well, as I said, I think they won't stop until they get they're convinced that the world has gotten the message. They've taken our energy hostage. I don't know what you guys are paying for your gas bill last winter every month, especially in the cold snap in January. But imagine a doubling. Now, some analysts will tell you, well, the United States has its own natural gas from fracking, and it has its own petroleum, and we mainly import from Canada and Mexico, so we're not dependent on the rest of the world. It doesn't work like that. It's one global market. I mean, there it's segmented a little bit, but it's the prices track pretty closely between, say, Brent crude, which is the North Sea oil from Britain, and the West Texas petroleum, which is the American. They go pretty much in tandem. So it's because it's one world market. If there's upward pressure on prices, it affects everybody. It doesn't matter whether you have oil or not. Your oil becomes expensive because everybody wants it. If you take 20% off the market, it doesn't go. The price doesn't go up 20% because both demand and production are inelastic. It's very hard to produce a lot more oil, especially since the swing producers are in the Gulf. So you're going to compete for a lesser amount. Everybody's going to compete for it, and it's very hard to not use it. If you've already bought a gasoline car, then you've got to buy gasoline. If you got to get to work that way, you don't have choices. You can't just absent yourself from that market. So demand is inelastic, supply is inelastic. If supply goes way down, then you've got more and more people competing for less and less oil.
It becomes a bidding war, essentially, for every gallon of gas.
It's exactly right. And it happens all over the world simultaneously. It is going to happen in the United States as well.
Well, so in terms of like Iran dictating this timeline, then the question is, how does Trump get to declare victory? Because we played a clip of Caroline Leavitt yesterday saying that Trump can declare unilateral surrender and he gets to determine what that means, which basically means like they want to win the PR battle here. But I mean, if you have the son of Khamenei as the leader and you still have the regime in place, I'm desperate for an off-ramp for this, but I don't even know how Trump can spin this as a even regime change victory at all, because it's literally the son of the guy that he just killed.
Yeah, that's awkward.
Yeah. yeah.
it's as long as Mojtaba Khamenei is the leader in Iran, relations with the United States are going to be tough. They may improve when Trump goes out, I think the Iranians really, as you say, are the ones who will determine when all this ends. And it's not the Americans and the Israelis think, well, they have a limited number of missiles and missile launchers. We'll attrite them, and after a while, they won't be able to do anything. But it doesn't work like that. They have these Shahed drones, which cost like $20,000 or $30,000 to make a piece. They can make 400 of them a week, and they're making them as we speak. And they had a big stockpile of them. I don't know, 30,000, 50,000 is not clear. And many of them can be launched from under the sand. So it's very hard to see where they're being launched from. So they can go on hitting near neighbors, Kuwait, Bahrain, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia for a long time. Attrition is not going to happen anytime soon. And as I said, the Americans don't understand who the Saudis and the Qataris really are in the world. They're like the world's country billionaires. You know, how we're always complaining the billionaires are pushing us around and so forth. But these guys, I mean, the Saudis have $1.5 trillion investment fund and $1.5 trillion in reserves. They have like $3 trillion walking around money. This is not money that they need to build roads or run the country. I mean, this is just loose change in their pockets. Imagine what you can buy with that. So they're not going to put up with this stuff. They're going to put enormous pressure on everybody to cut this out and to make a deal with Iran that everybody can live with. And of course, they're peeved at Iran because Iran has attacked them and they're furious about it. But they also don't want to get involved in a war with Iran, which they know they can't win. They're small countries. They have small populations. Iran can outlast them. And it's nearby. Iran can even do guerrilla work against them. So they're going to be a major player in settling this thing. And they're very upset about Israel. People always think about them as potential allies of Israel. And the Israelis are hoping now the Iranians attack them, they'll swing around to Tel Aviv. I'm going to tell you, they are furious. They are livid with Israel for dragging them into this. And they're not going to have this going on, mowing the lawn every once in a while.
So, in other words, is the Abraham Accords, are those dead? A. B. Is MBS on the phone with Donald Trump and be like, thank you for letting me slide on the murdering of a journalist, but I'm going to need a little bit more. You need to shut this down type of thing. I guess like the third question is like, what was Israel thinking? Like, I can understand, frankly, Donald Trump, people coming to him and saying, you should do this. It's going to be just like Venezuela. You're going to own part of Iranian oil and you're going to be the guy who beat Iran, and him going, okay, and just doing it. And then finding out 2 weeks later, it doesn't feel right. But what, like, is Netanyahu just doing this just to keep Israel involved in a war for his own personal thing? Or does he actually believe like this could work out?
Well, Netanyahu is the victim of his own success. I mean, he's been in power a very long time and he has accomplished many of his goals over time. He has destroyed the Palestinians and reduced the Gazans to fourth world status and deprived them of potable drinking water and so forth. And he's whipped the Egyptians into shape. The Egyptians are basically cooperating with him. And they're the major nearby military power. The government in Syria, which was an enemy of Israel's, has been overthrown. Hezbollah has been taken down. So Netanyahu went from what he saw as victory to victory in not only securing security for Israel, because security actually in the long term would require good relations with neighbors, but in acquiring power and fear. And so he thought he can do to Iran what he's done to these others, to the other neighbors. And Iran is a different kettle of fish. It doesn't work like that. He doesn't understand Iran. It was one of the problems with the Israeli elite is that although they are in the Middle East, they don't know very much about it. They're like, it's as if, you know, you had Polish people running the place. In fact, you know, of course,
it's as if the reality is what it is. But like, can you talk more about how Iran may react in terms of nuclearization? I know we probably have to let you go soon, but I was thinking about how the Kim Jong-un, right, the never promised to denuclearize, looking kind of good right now, especially when you see what happened when Gaddafi, after he made an agreement at the early part of the 21st century and then was impaled and assassinated. Now Iran, after they did a deal with the Americans, the JCPOA, okay, we're going to bomb your entire leadership, kill 1,300 people, including little girls, and also do a kind of an act of ecocide and allow the bombing of these oil fields that are going to cause all this damage to the population. Like, they are creating more incentives for more countries to create nuclear weapons as a deterrent.
Oh, absolutely. Well, from the inception, when the French and the British connived at getting the Israelis a nuclear weapon, they set off an arms race in the Middle East. Iraq had a nuclear program for this reason, and Iran, you know, this is controversial, but in my view, the Islamic Republic has never wanted a nuclear device. They were pursuing what is sometimes called the Japan option. As you know, Japan, everybody knows they have lots of plutonium and they're good at technology. So if they wanted to, the Japanese could make a bomb pretty quickly. And they hope that since everybody knows that, it has a deterrent effect, that North Koreans won't dare come for them because, you know, the response could be that Tokyo would suddenly be armed with nukes as well. So I think the Iranians were trying for that, but it didn't work. The Japan option didn't work. And they have because it's a theocratic state, and Americans, oddly enough, don't understand this. Americans are much more religious than most industrialized democracies, but they still don't understand religion. Like the Iranian leadership always said it doesn't want a nuclear device because you can't use it without killing large numbers of innocent civilians, and that's against Islamic law of war. They genuinely believe that. And people push back against me. They say, well, they don't genuinely believe it, and they're hypocrites or they're lying or whatever. And I said, okay, does anybody believe that the Pope has a condom factory in the basement of the Vatican?
No, I don't.
Because we take him at his word that he doesn't approve of birth control. He issued an encyclical. Well, the leader of Iran, Khamenei, issued numerous encyclicals that making an atomic bomb is illegal in Islamic law. Now, they've killed that guy. And the way Islamic law works in Iran is that the fatwas or the considered legal opinions of a dead jurisprudent don't count. So now the new guy has to make a fatwa. And we don't know what that's going to be. And it could well be that Iran goes towards nuclearization. It has a lot of underground facilities. It still has a lot of highly enriched uranium. And I also think that the Saudis will. The Saudis are not going to put up with being vulnerable. You know, the Israelis bombed Doha and Qatar last September, and that set off alarm bells all in the Gulf that we need better protection. So they went to Pakistan and said, would you protect us? And the Pakistan has a nuke. And the Pakistanis said yes. But now the Saudis are calling Islamabad every day and saying, what are you doing to protect us? You promised you would. And the Pakistanis don't want to get involved. So I wouldn't be surprised, but the outcome of what Netanyahu has done is to push the entire region towards nuclearization.
Professor Cole, it is always incredibly informative to speak with you. Not always cheery, I have to say. But I suspect we'll be turning to you in the coming weeks. Hopefully not the coming months about this, but it seems conceivable. Really appreciate your time. Folks should also check out Informed Comment. It has been a read of mine now for 20 some odd years, which is also a little disturbing. But thank you so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Sam. It's great to see you and nice to meet you, Emma.
Nice to meet you as well.
All right, folks, that's it for the first half of the program today, which, of course, ended up being the first two-thirds of the program, or I don't, five-fourths
sure.
of the program, four-fifths of the program.
Yeah, it's the first definitely five-fourths of the program.
Yeah.
I mean, mathematics.
Listen, hey, I don't know if you work with lumber at all, but that's not so crazy. Go in and try and ask for a one and one fifth width on a board. It ain't happening. It's six fifths.
Got his ass.
Huh?
Got his ass.
Bam! Folks, in the meantime, it's your support that makes this show possible. Lizzie, he can't even talk right now.
You can't even make an argument anymore, can you?
Matt's getting very emotional.
You're having an emotional breakdown.
There you go.
Folks, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at JoinTheMajorityReport.com. When you do, you only get the free show free of commercials, but you also get the fun half, and you can IM us. And I don't know if we'll be taking phone calls today, but hopefully maybe tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow we'll only have one guest since we had so many, and we'll get into calls earlier tomorrow. But it's your support that keeps this show keeping on. You can help this show survive and thrive by going to jointhemajorityreport.com and becoming a member. Also, justcoffee.coop, our longest sponsor. I was probably saying that, Just Coffee 17 years ago, maybe it was, when we had Professor Cole on Break Room Live. Oh, we had him on. He was a regular guest on the Majority Report on Air America.
Wow.
JustCoffee.coop, fair trade, coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Get the Majority Report blend. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leck Media universe?
Yeah, Left Reckoning coming up right after the show today. More Iran coverage because it's all David and I can think about, frankly. So we talked with Kuba of This Is Revolution, who's got a new series, What Fresh Hell, over on that YouTube channel, talking about The View. He's in Warsaw, so we talked about The View from Europe a little bit. So check that out. And we also I double-dipped on my senator from North Dakota, Kevin Cramer, being citing the Bible as a reason we need to do this war in Iran. So check that out right after the show today.
You're not sold on that.
I'm pretty skeptical, actually, yeah.
Uncommon Merganizer. I just want to get this. I want to make sure that we get this in the first half of the show. I'm currently capping off some wainscoting with 5/4 PVC. That's what I asked for at the lumberyard.
That's me thinking. See, maybe I should half. Maybe I should go work the there again. Actually, never know. Oh wait, oh we're still on air. Damn it. Oh, we're not. Oh.
Three months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow. What? What is that going on? It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt!
Who?
Fun. What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it!
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this...
7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? You're safe?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports.
We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
Oh, I'm going to go start
off. Libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. You call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all, my favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we seen you. All right, folks.
It's just the weak being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sundial guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Galactic Nurse Boogoos. The best part of paying for an MR membership is hearing how the sausage gets made, as Brian says, my bad, off-air weekly.
If we're getting down to only once a week, I feel like that's a lot of improvement.
Socialist accountant. I recommend that Sam tries being a substitute teacher for a high school shop class. He's got his fractions down.
Yeah, Sam would actually really like that.
I would actually really like that. Oh, here we go. Saturn girl. Sam, I'm an astrologer, and I want to assure you of three things. This war will take a lot longer than everyone anticipates. There will be an economic crash and inflationary crisis within 2 weeks of either side of September 2nd. The United States will not exist as one nation by 2032. At least with the...
Who is this?
You had me until the 2032 thing as one nation.
Don't argue with the moon.
But...
It's in the stars.
six years? I mean...
I did download an astrology app a few months ago for, like, the first time, and it's giving me some sort of false comfort sometimes.
Well,
like, show your work.
Saturn girl was right about something else. I can't remember what it was that she you were correct about that you made me concede.
But I agree with the first two ones. The United States falling apart by 2032 doesn't seem accurate.
I also don't know if I would place the economic thing in that 1 month span that they said. Might come sooner, might come later. I don't know how the stars are telling them that.
I'm going to head to Polly Market. Okay. Here is Chuck Schumer. I mean, here's the thing. It is quite clear now, right? I mean, put aside the horror of us engaging in a war, period, and the uselessness associated with it, and the death and destruction that we bring about. And the cost, and not just the cost, but also the sort of like the injection of all these resources into the war machine. All that is enough to oppose this war. Chuck Schumer is compelled to support this war because, as he says, he said multiple times, more than anything I've ever heard him say, is that his job is to protect Israel. As Senate Majority Leader, as Senate Minority Leader, his job is to do this. And so he cannot have a full-throated argument against this war. And as a political matter, put aside all the other moral issues and all of the practical issues and the material issues associated with this.
Right.
As strictly a political matter, Democrats winning in the fall, Democrats taking not only the House, which seems to be a foregone conclusion by now, but also taking back the Senate, which is a big uphill climb. If Chuck Schumer and the Democratic leadership was to hold the Republicans responsible for stopping the War Powers Act, if Jeffries had whipped that vote and not allowed four Democrats to go and provide the margin of victory to shoot down the War Powers Act. If Chuck Schumer had come out a week ago and said, we're not giving a dime for this war, not a dime. If he had given a full-throated argument against this war, all the disaster that is bound to happen, the oil shocks, the food spikes in inflation, that's baked into the cake. That's happening. It may take a while for it to get through the system, but that's going to happen. And there could be very well more. If he had done that, or if he was to do that, if he was to do that yesterday, let's say, or today, Democrats would have a much better chance at taking the Senate. But let's tune in and see how vociferously and how strident against this war and how he says this is going to be a problem for America. Chuck Schumer, speak for us.
Yesterday, Trump suggested without any explanation that, quote, I think the war is very complete, pretty much. But this morning, Pete Hegseth stood before the camera and announced that today will be the most intense day of strikes yet. He said that today's activity will, quote, involve the most fighters, the most bombers, the most strikes. Well, which is it? Is the war ending? Or are we on the brink of the worst fighting yet? How is it possible that Trump and his cronies can't make it 12 hours without contradicting themselves about this war? It's incredible. Never seen anything like
the contradiction. Americans,
your logic.
When faced with a war that they cannot win in the Middle East, one which is going to cause oil shocks, that's going to cause food shocks, that's going to cause complete upheaval, the thing they hate is contradictions. And for those people who are not watching the news cycle on 24 hours, I'm telling you, I'm here to tell you there's been a contradiction in the past 12 hours.
There's still a minute left of this. He might get to some substance.
No more contradictions. No more contradictions. It's amazing how he, that's the first time he gets animated in this thing too, right? Like they're all over the place. Contradictions.
Yeah, and that sound drop you played, we should just, after this, play that clip from last summer, just to give people a sense that he's copy-pasting this procedural argument from the last time that we Israel bombed Iran.
This is not even rise to a procedural argument. This is, or I don't appreciate their messaging.
Yeah, well, it's inconsistent.
Make it coherent.
How is it possible that Trump and his cronies can't make it 12 hours without contradicting themselves about this war?
You tell us.
It's incredible. Never seen anything like it.
Whoa. Can't believe this is
a war.
Down.
Serious. Putting our soldiers in harm's way. Costing billions which should be spent on reducing our costs here overseas. And they don't even have a rationale. They keep contradicting each other and contradicting themselves.
Pause it for a second. Excuse me. Our costs here overseas. He doesn't even have an agenda. It's just like our costs here. But they're spending it overseas.
Contradicting each other and contradicting themselves. Yesterday, President Trump was also asked whether the war is, quote, very complete, as he said, or is it just at the beginning, as Hegseth says.
Yeah, you said that.
Well, do you care to guess the president's answer?
No.
Do you?
Okay, let's everybody guess. I'm actually supporting legislation to make Polymarket perfectly legitimate. So everybody guess and put down on your trade sports.
Yeah, you know what is not a salient political argument is when you're just pointing out the fact that there's muddled messaging from the administration without saying what is muddled about it. You're just criticizing the fact that they're not clear enough about their scale and scope of this criminal war in Iran.
I mean, if you don't say, are we finished with the war? Are we just starting the war? You might confuse the enemy.
And I'm sorry, but there is political salience to being supposedly anti-war and standing up against this, because I am not convinced that the dynamic is the same as Iraq when you have people on their phones all of the time being able to see this brutality and people seeing what Israel has done in Gaza and now understanding inextricably that it's linked to this bombing campaign in Iran. You can make a humanitarian argument about it, and that would still have infinitely more salience
even with the most cynical view of the American public, than whatever this garbage is.
You don't even have to do that. 41% of the public, 60% of the public is already against it. 60% is already, you're on the winning side already. And what you're doing is actually leveling a complaint that is not as far as to where the American public is on this.
It is amazing. And this is the problem. You know, I hesitated to use the term controlled opposition because I don't think that it's actually the most helpful. But what I like to call him is a fascist collaborator. Now, some people might say you can drop the collaborator part. But from a political perspective, I think collaboration is the best way to dislodge this Zionist plant who's a religious ideologue and also completely corrupted. Who knows what it is at this point? Who is committing political malfeasance? When you look at the polling on this issue, what happened to the popularists? What happened to the popularists that he listens to all the time saying that they should reorient democratic politics around zoning or whatever, or abandon trans people? This is an unpopular war. And the only thing he can come up and muster and say, well, I don't know if it's going to last like multiple months because the administration isn't being clear. Are you in favor of it lasting multiple months? Are you in favor of it ending tomorrow? The answer is more the former. Because he's not just corrupted by, like, you know, saying, I want to stand up for Israel and provide them with money. He's also roped into their strategic objectives, which is just like raining fire and chaos on the country in the region that's going to be most effective at opposing them. And Americans be damned.
Like, I can't.
They talk about democracy. This is the guy who was like, oh, democracy, dude. And Trump is a threat to democracy. I mean, seriously, he puts Israel before Americans.
He's a threat to democracy. But what's worse is he's a threat to contradictions. People, which way are we going? Is it cold? Is it hot? I don't know.
I'll tell you, he's a lawyer.
I mean, watched that thing.
Yeah.
Even if I was like the Zionist that Chuck Schumer is like, in, you know, saying like, I'm going to protect Israel. That's my number one job. I'd be like, man, this guy is lame. Like, he can't even do this. Well.
But that's why, no, they want him to be lame. They want him to be as weak as possible, because if the leader of the opposition party to the Christian Zionist fundamentalist freaks on the right is completely feckless, it's actually best case scenario.
But so it goes to what I said yesterday. Why is the party still lined up behind him? House Foreign Affairs Committee, this is the House. Listen to this tweet. The American people want affordable health care, gas, and groceries. Okay, good so far. Instead, they have a president spending billions on a war of choice in the Middle East. Okay, good. Congress must not send Trump a blank check to continue this war without first getting a lot more answers.
Whoops.
What the hell are you talking about? We have the answers. We're act on our conclusions.
Enraging.
I mean, and you know what? Like, the timing of him becoming Senate Majority Leader and then Trump coming in and destroying the JCPOA.
It's a joke on our
I
democracy.
Mean, it is a, yeah. Like,
this guy cannot get out of office quick enough. I mean, I genuinely believe he's not going to run for re-election because there's absolutely no way.
I agree.
With a decent challenge that he isn't going to lose. But I think he is going to try and make a deal in 2026 when new senators come in. And certainly some of those are coming in. Let's get rid of Chuck Schumer. And he's going to say, I'm going to quit. I'm going to resign in 2 years, but let me stay a majority leader till then. We don't want any fights and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. F that. He should be resigning as let him serve out his term, but not as Senate Majority Leader, Minority Leader. Let him just be a backbencher. Jesus, it's unbelievable.
Well, this is where are Bernie and Warren and Chris Murphy and Van Hollen? Where are they? What happened to the Fight Club from 3 months ago? I will repeat this. Republicans make a spectacle out of their internal disagreement. It hasn't affected them. Actually, it would look much better to the American public where we don't have that Zionist plant as the face of the party going out there and making the worst message possible about one of the... I mean, this is this action that we've taken here. The catastrophic consequences cannot be understated here. Like, the only reason he was able, by the way, to do this so unilaterally is because we didn't prosecute anybody for the illegal war in Iraq. And they realized that they could just, he just can do whatever he wants unilaterally, wage war against Iran because Netanyahu told him to do so. And why would he think that there would be any consequences to that? Like, why even go through the process of having to go ask Congress and go to the UN when I can just do whatever I want anyway? It's not like Cheney and Bush or Condoleezza Rice or Colin Powell or, you know, Scooter, well, whatever. Like, all of the Bush administration officials received any, like, actual criminal penalty here. I mean, give me a break. Well, and Chuck Schumer was complicit in that.
The Baileys don't like contradiction. That's the way they hate it.
How?
He was on a book tour at the start of the term last year about how anti-Semitism is the most urgent problem. And in that book tour, he explicitly stated to the New York Times that actually my reason and the mission I'm on for that cause is to make sure the left stays pro-Israel, which the left is not.
Obviously, I didn't do yoga this morning, so I'm pissed off about this. But, like, how do we have the leader of the Democrats in the Senate who supported the Iraq war? Iraq war.
When Mr. Bailey takes his car to the, I'm going to try and explain this to you. Understand.
Yep.
He takes his car to the mechanic and he calls the mechanic and he says, how much is it going to cost me? And the mechanic says, it's going to cost a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But then he calls back the next morning and only speaks to the clerk. And the clerk says, I don't know. It may not be that much. Mr. Bailey hates that. There's a contradiction.
Yeah, yes.
There's two different, no, you understand. And it's confusing. And we're not going to stand for it. What is it?
This is
Mr. Bailey would rather hear that it's going to cost $3,600. You got to get new struts. You got to get new brakes. You got to do the entire muffler system. I mean, from the beginning to the end, not just the muffler, but the entire exhaust, rather than hear contradictions.
Mr. Bailey, I know that you're almost, you know, fixated on internal contradictions, but did you like Barack Obama? Were you a fan of Obama as president? Okay. So Obama, a big part of his
appeal. Obama's all over the lot.
A big part of his appeal was that he was against the Iraq war. Do you think that, like, that was something that perhaps should have been replicated in the party instead of quadrupling down on a leadership that is so morally bankrupt and corrupted by Zionist and military industrial complex money that we've squashed that entire constituency and the biggest electoral victory for Democrats in decades?
Well, I think the problem was flip-flop. That was the problem.
That's the problem.
People don't like contradiction.
They're going to sound tough in public and then have a side deal that lets Iran get away with everything?
What the hell is that?
And honestly, if you make a case about this war and about Israel's genocide to the public, like, I'm not naive to think that there are a lot of people in this country that don't care. I get it. But what it signals to people, what it signals to them, is that you're not corrupted and that you have some sort of moral backbone.
Not to the Baileys.
That's
they
it.
Like it.
There's no chance this war gets more popular. It's going to be exceedingly unpopular. They are leaving all of that on the table because Chuck Schumer supports this war probably as much or more than Donald Trump does.
Yeah. All right. Well,
he's right where he wants to be. So if he's going to go, it's going to have to be the rest of the Senate.
Yep. Matt, you can say that the American public doesn't support this war because it's true.
I'm a popularist.
Put number 10 up. It's very easy for you, Matt, to say that the American public doesn't appreciate this war. Number 10? Is this the CNN thing? Number 10. Oh, yeah. Okay. It's very easy to say the American public doesn't support this war. We can see it from the polling. The American public can't really tell why we're doing it because Iran's not a danger to us. But have you ever thought that maybe the Iranian people appreciate this war because they're the ones getting bombed? Let's play this interview that, Jake Tapper did with Emily Schrader, the reporter Emily Schrader.
Emily, you've been talking to Iranians on the ground about the strikes and about Iranian leadership going forward. How do the Iranians you're talking to, how do they see the future unfolding in Iran?
Of course, there's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of problems with the internet still being shut off, although there is some limited use with Starlink and limited other options. But by and large, the responses from Iranians that I've spoken to has been overwhelmingly in favor of the United States and Israeli action on the ground. They're very happy that regime targets, many of them, the centers of suppression of the Iranian people, many of these besieged IRGC bases and forces are in fact being targeted. So they're happy about that. The main complaint that I'm hearing right now on the ground is that they're witnessing, personally witnessing, IRGC troops moving into schools and mosques. I've received a plethora of photos from Iranians on the ground of exactly that, moving both the force, the manpower, and weapons and equipment into school areas. So this is something very concerning. It's not new. It is a tactic of the Islamic regime and their proxy forces, but it's definitely concerning for the future. And of course, there is some questioning about what President Trump does intend for the leadership. The united call from the Iranian people on the ground is that they want the Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi to lead a transition government. After that, go to a national referendum. Well, they will choose the system of government, but it's not clear yet where Trump stands on that issue. And we heard it in his press conference as well. He prefers someone inside. The problem is it isn't Venezuela. It's not the same system. And you have to deconstruct that system, the IRGC, in order to have genuine change and stability.
This is
interesting stuff, Emily.
Oh, interesting stuff. Emily Schrader, incidentally, she had a big announcement some time ago. As Iran approaches 2 weeks, this is, I guess, about a month or two ago, right? When Iran had the complete communications blackout. I am thrilled to announce I'm part of a historic, highly confidential alliance of Israeli tech veterans and Iranian underground operatives. Together, we are building the digital and financial infrastructure for a G7 nation before the regime falls, starting with two stealth ventures, secret ventures, that simultaneously sever the dictatorship's two main chokeholds, connectivity and capital. Okay.
This tweet's off the record.
Ahmed Chalabi. Ahmed Chalabi. Except for this is worse. I mean, this is, I'm sorry, this is worse. This woman is so deluded as to what's happening in Iran. It is shocking.
Well, I mean, I'm shocked that you would say that, Sam. She is native to the land, a.k.a. grew up in California and moved to Israel in 2015.
Oh. I had no idea.
You know,
and then starting the Iran-Israel alliance. You know, it's only been up for 10 years, but we got.
Yeah. And I believe she works for or has done work for this organization called the Jewish News Syndicate, which is a nonprofit that is associated with Israel Hayom. It has a distribution deal with them, which is the Adelson's far right paper within Israel that they subsidize.
Interesting. Interesting.
But. You know, I'm sure, and I'm sorry, got to give credit to Jasper Nathaniel on this joke, but I'm sure that Jake Tapper on October 8th had members of Hamas or Palestinian representatives come on to say how all the Israelis were actually super happy about October 7th. Mm-hmm. Right? He did that, right?
It's stunning. It's stunning that there's no pushback on that thing.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, that's not
push forward. Jake Tapp is right behind her, pushing her forward with both of his hands on his shoulders. Like, it's like Barry Weiss. Like, that's the thing is, like, it's not just CBS. Our press is entirely controlled by people who support Israel and won't want to have an honest discussion about what they're doing in the country and what they're entangling our country in. And so we're bombing. We're turning the skies into an apocalypse.
To be fair. The same company that owns CBS is basically now primed to own CNN.
Uh-huh.
So to be fair, there is, you know, some incentive. But look, CNN, CBS, it's not our only media. Okay, let's see what the other side. On one hand, Jake Tapper is having journalists on who are working with a clandestine Israeli-Iranian group to sever the relationship with them and their regime, supposedly, whatever. Okay, fine. Jake Tapper's not doing that. But if we head over to Fox News, we're going to get a different perspective. Okay. There is a range of conversation about this war in our mainstream media. Granted, Jake Tapper sort of promoting this, but on Fox News, at least, we're getting a different message.
Yeah. I understand that the Democrats have their own political spin on this, but I think they should be careful about some of the talking points that they were releasing. They're talking about the oil prices and the way that it's going to impact and that the president can't last too long. That is exactly what Iran wants to happen. Part of their strategy of this is the propaganda machine that's going out there saying these things. And they believe that if they could get the prices of oil up, that the president would have to draw from the conflict. So just careful, guys. Right.
Careful, guys. Careful, guys. Listen, if you don't say anything, then Americans won't notice that their gas now costs $4.99 in a gallon.
If their propaganda machine can just relay basic cause and effect.
Stop accurately describing Iran's tactics that are having an impact on your life in retaliation for Trump's insane actions. That causes a little bit too much.
I get Democrats want to do politics, but talking about the price of oil, that seems to be out of bounds. Trump. So on one hand, we have CNN inviting without any pushback that the Iranian people are happy to be bombed because they think it's going to lead to regime change, which almost every word in that sentence is ranges from suspect to total bullshit. And then at least on Fox News, the other cable channel we got, they're out there saying, you shouldn't even talk about what's going on as a second order result of the war, because then it's sort of what Iran wants you to do.
Even Trump's not saying it's that's not real. He says, I don't have any concern about it. The prices will drop very rapidly when this is over. And if they rise, they rise. But this is far more important than having gasoline prices go up a little bit.
You know, I think he is a little concerned about it. He might be bluffing because he... I seemingly lied over and over again at market close and went on for so long that he bumped you from CNN, unfortunately, because that segment ran over. But about how the war is about to end. And then we wake up this morning and it seems like that's not the case. So
it's all over the map.
At least tell a consistent
all
story.
The contradictions. I can't even follow the story. Somebody calls me at 5 p.m. and they're like, what's happening with the war? And I say, well, maybe it's going to wrap up. And then a couple hours later, people call me back and they go,
yeah, and
what happened? And I'm like, I don't know.
And when you say, when Chuck feels like Trump's talking like it might wrap up soon, that's when he gets really anxious.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, also this was...
I was counting on the war continuing.
He was saying, Trump, go at the oil reserves to make sure this pressure doesn't actually get to you. He was doing the opposite of what that Fox News guy was doing.
And just to about how Trump is, I really think was lying at that point to get the markets to go back to again, the price of a barrel was at peaked at 120, which is very high. And then it went down to 90 after Trump said the war was ending. But then at night, I guess after this 5:30 p.m., so that might have been right after closing. I'm 5 p.m. is when
closes
markets close.
4, right?
4. Okay, sure. Then I don't remember, but this was still after that. Then he says, if Iran does anything that stops the flow of oil within the Strait of Hormuz, they will be hit with what? Yeah, they will be hit by the United States of America 20 times harder than they have been thus far. Additionally, we will take a blah, blah, blah. So he's saying that if Iran exercises its sovereignty and tries to use economic leverage against the country that is bombing them and killing thousands within Iran, then he's going to implement collective punishment on the people of Iran. But apparently the people of Iran are really, really excited about this development.
I mean, to do that segment after they bombed their oil infrastructure is frankly disgusting. Like the type of thing that I would see Jake Tapper put in front of the Hague for. Like, these are war crimes we're talking about. We're doing war crimes.
Absolutely.
And Jake Tapper wants to talk about Mom Donnie's fucking wife's Instagram likes. It is really sick what's happening in this country right now.
And when we're talking about, like, what is the motivation here, and we know what Israel's motivation is, and Netanyahu wants, like, Iran to fall into a failed state or have regime change that's more favorable to them, I also don't think we can undersell how Trump is
aging, knows he's dying, and is being sold these ideas about how you can achieve something no president ever has. Venezuela is the first domino to fall in that, which is like, we've been trying to take out Chavez and Maduro for decades. You can be the guy to do it. He does it. It's, for their standards, a successful operation. Then he gets sold something even greater on Cuba. And we are still implementing a siege of their resources on Cuba.
Speaking of crimes.
But that's not, there's no geopolitical, there's really, really geopolitical, like rational, really little geopolitical rational rationalization that you can take from that, right? Because actually what would benefit the United States, and Obama understood this at the end of his term, was calming down relations with Cuba. They're right off our coast. We could have an economic and trade relationship with them. The Cold War, we could, moving past that would actually be in our interests. But he's still pursuing that because it's an appeal to his ego. We've been trying to get rid of the Cuban regime for this amount of years. And Iran is the same thing. He's not, he's too stupid and arrogant to understand the consequences of it. And I don't necessarily think it's connected to a broader strategy outside of like every neocon coming in and saying, and perhaps like the, you know, the right wing Cuban diaspora in Florida that he's also pretty beholden to, that like, this is our time to strike.
The for the Cubans, the obvious reason is that we do not want a soft landing with the Cuban government. We want it to implode so that we can go back in that moment, go back in and make a legal claim to property that was my great grandparents that they had essentially acquired because they were playing ball with Batista, who was a huge criminal.
Slave regime.
And in Iran, like, it's completely, there's not even, this is the thing that's amazing. You cannot even hear anybody articulate what is supposed to happen after this. Yes. Like at least with Iraq, they had a pretend end game. We're going to be met. We're going to liberate these people. We're going to be met with flowers and candy. And we're going to have a, we're going to create an entire sort of like ground, you know, year one. And it's going to be a free market test. And then we're going to go to Syria, and then we're going to democratize the, and nobody's saying that.
Well, that's my point.
That's the point is
when you look at it from the perspective of like Trump acting without having a plan, but based on being his ego being appealed to about being able to achieve these things, that could kind of square that circle, right?
Yeah, I mean, with him, I think he just thought it was going to be easy. But I don't even know what the people who are pushing him to do it.
Well, Lindsey Graham is the guy, I guess, on Iran. But yeah.
Folks, just wanted to make a note of this. I've just been informed it is our 5-year partner anniversary on Twitch.
Nice. Thought we had breaking news or something.
Hype train. That is a hype train. Poggers. Poggers, ladies and gentlemen. Poggers. Okay. So I was supposed to go on CNN yesterday, as I mentioned at the end of the show.
Such a shame.
It is too bad. There's about 5 or 6 days ago, there was a story about Congressman Goldman's wife, who worked on his campaign as treasurer, had retweeted some really horrific things.
Like, from end wokeness, racist things.
Matt Walsh. Like, she was mad that apparently Matt Walsh wrote, like, California is doing an Amber Alert for black people, which I imagine is something like we're trying to reach people where they are in their communities. I have no idea. But black people have enough. She retweeted that. I mean, stuff like that. Like, really?
Goldman's wife
actually bad things
met at an AIPAC event. I still can't get over
a racist
how...
at an AIPAC event.
Fork found in kitchen.
I mean, like, but and it was a story in the New York Times, so I can understand this on some level. And then I think Jewish Currents found that Zohran Mamdani's wife, prior to him being mayor, of course, had retweeted stuff in the wake of October 7th.
Liked
posts on Instagram, I guess. Yeah. And a crack reporter found supposedly 50 other instances of stuff that hardcore Zionists would not appreciate.
Yeah, biased against Israel.
Yes. People who hardcore Zionists would not appreciate. And here she is off of her John Oliver parody beat. What's her name? Olivia Rheingold.
I was supposed to go on CNN tonight to debate my latest reporting on the Instagram likes of Rama Dewaji, that is the wife of Mayor Zohran Mamdani. The debate got canceled, but these are the points I was going to make. One, I wanted to just get into the extreme nature of the posts that his wife was liking. These were not your average pro-Palestine posts. These were way more anti-Israel than they were
pro-Palestine. Wait, pause. I'm sorry. I want to actually go... She goes by the post really quickly, I would imagine.
Because she's lying.
Yeah. So pause on this one that she liked here, the world leaders thing. Yeah. To our world leaders, this is the extremism that of the likes. To our world leaders, you created a killing machine that you can't control. Where is your humanity? Go F yourselves. Hashtag ceasefire now. Wow.
So
extreme. We should honestly be investigating Zohran's wife for ties to Hamas, obviously, based on that. Please don't do that.
It may not have been Jewish Currents. It was maybe some other outfit. I can't remember now.
The Free Press?
The Free Press found extra ones that were
Jewish Currents is good.
Even more biased against
even
Israel.
More biased yeah. against Israel. Really outside of the scope. I mean,
that's so crazy.
Yeah, just the idea that they're still hammering on this.
Actually, what this one says is this: that thing says the Palestinian Right to Return Coalition. That's the extreme thing. Is something that is recognized under international law, but the rest.
No, they think it is extreme because they say that like racial integration in Israel, which is what Right to Return is, meaning Palestinians get to live in this area too,
and the demographic gets threatened.
And they call that the denial of Israel's existence. Huh? What does that sound like? That sounds exactly like what every Nazi and white nationalist says in this country about brown people immigrating here. That America will be, it will end if we have more Latinos here. Gosh, it's almost like the end of the nation state. Sounds exactly the same.
These were not your average pro-Palestine posts. These were way more anti-Israel than they were pro-Palestine. There was a post celebrating October 7th. There was another one.
Wait.
Pause it. There was not a post celebrating October 7th. Let's make something clear. I have members of my family who are in favor of this Iran war. I've been through this with them before. Within like a couple of months, they will reverse themselves and pretend like they never were. But be that as it may, that does not mean that they are celebrating 100 children being killed. They're not celebrating 100 children being killed. They believe that the U.S. should wage this war. They're wrong. It's a huge mistake. When what she says was celebrating October 7th, no, they were talking about it being a response to living in an open-air prison and busting through the gates. They were not celebrating the
civilian hostages.
Civilian hostages or the killing of civilians, but rather the fact that they were fighting back against being locked into this jail. And so, but they don't want to get into the nuance of that. She would have showed it, but go ahead.
So this is the extreme post by post, breaking the walls of apartheid. This is actually quite a beautiful post, I think. showing a visual of breaking down walls of apartheid, which means obviously that you believe that the Holocaust.
It's a Bastille type image, that bulldozer thing, regardless of what happened, you know. And you know, when you have people like Captain Open Air Prison, the discipline militarily isn't exactly the best.
Yes, and let's also be clear, like, the idea that, like, they're going to walk through that fence and not get shot, when they walked close to that fence in protest, they
peaceful
got shot.
Protest.
Post-celebrating October 7th, there was another one doubting whether women had
this
really...
This is probably the most controversial of them, the Z-Squirrel post, which is just... Z-Squirrel is a provocative account on Twitter for sure, but one, I think she was liking these on Instagram, which means she might not even be familiar with the posts other than just like the point that's being made here, which is... a salient one, speaking about how the New York Times hired, yes, a recently graduated college student with only a couple prior articles written on the subject to talk about the supposed mass rapes on October 7th. It was also in the other reporter on it also didn't have any reporting experience, was previously a filmmaker. And the reality is that the evidence has basically shown at this point that yes, it is quite likely that the sexual assaults happened on October 7th. The idea that it was systemic is a hoax. It's false. It's false. Yes, there were war crimes committed on October 7th. The notion that Palestinians were using rape as a systematic weapon of war, and that it was systemic in that way, is a old racist trope about that has been used against black people to justify lynchings in the South, and is a way to essentially demean them as such savages that they would engage in this kind of thing. Then when we've seen actual footage out of Sayed Tamon, the torture dungeon that the Israelis engage in, of them using their shields to block the security camera footage as one of their fellow guards rapes somebody on camera. We have that footage. It's all projection with them.
They've been debating about whether those people should face consequences.
This is perhaps the only controversial post that she liked, and it's actually accurate.
Whether women had really been raped on October 7th, and there was even one that showed Holocaust inversion. The next thing I wanted to address,
the comparing
Holocaust
it to the Holocaust.
Holocaust inversion is the thing where you point out, like, at one time, these people were victims of Nazis, and now they're acting like Nazis.
Yep. Yeah, this is like concentration camps.
Cost inversion. The next thing I wanted to address was Mamdani's response that his wife is a, quote, private person or private citizen. If that is a standard, I've never heard of that before. Because does anyone remember when Justice Alito's wife hung the flag upside down and there were a zillion articles about that? What about
Pause
Melania?
It for 1 second. We were told by Alito at his house where a flag, an anti-gay flag and a pro January 6th flag waved. We were told by Alito that it was his wife. That's not the report. That's the excuse. That's the excuse that Alito, to avoid having responsibility, to avoid being seen, incidentally, there is a very, very high standard, the highest standard required of justices, of judges, and particularly Supreme Court justices, of having no bias whatsoever. The way he deflected from that in hearing January 6th cases was to say that it was his wife's. That was the way that he escaped culpability for having an outward showing of bias in cases that were coming to him. Because that wasn't his wife's house. That was their house. And he just said, my wife, she loves to put up the flags.
Well, it was the anti-gay flag. And then wasn't it the American flag upside down to signal
there
like support for January 6th,
yeah,
the January 6ers, which like, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And so he's using that as an excuse. Now, I wonder if she's going to talk about Congressman Goldman's wife, who worked on his campaign.
Yeah, I wonder where she got this pitch, by the way.
Good. About that, what about Melania when she wore that jacket that said, I don't really care, do you? That was news, right? Who you decide to marry is one of the most
But wasn't this when they were this was child separation policy? This was during the family separation policy controversy, and yeah. She went on a plane.
Oh, here's the other thing.
Wait,
she was the first lady at the time.
But also, like, this is the thing: is like, if a spouse does something really bad, look, the Dan Goldman thing, I honestly didn't care because Dan Goldman has things like literally votes in Congress that exactly. I think are worse than anything she said. But I have no problem saying, yeah, she probably shouldn't retweet Matt Walsh. Nothing Zohran's wife has done that she cited here or I've seen anywhere else I have any objection to. And these things are actually bad. So this whole part of the conversation about private individual, I honestly don't even really care about.
Well, the point is, I'm just curious how she got this pitch. That really is, because I hadn't made that connection until you did, Sam, about that article in the New York Times about Dan Goldman's wife, which I agree, it's not like the best way to hit Goldman. It's just like another indication of what Zionism is and what his ideology is.
He censured Tlaib and voted to defund UNRWA.
Yeah, we can talk about it on those terms, but it just seems interesting that after Mamdani's been elected, I mean, he's been in office for nearly 2 months or around 2 months at this point. Why now? Why does Olivia go through her likes on Instagram now? Could it have something to do with the race in this city that had that story? I mean, she gets pitched things all the time, I'd imagine.
Oh, I mean, it's not, she could either get pitched by it for it, or just like, oh, wait, that's a good idea. I should go try and do that ourselves.
Well, I
super creative.
Yeah, I'm not, I guess I don't have a very high opinion of her journalistic instincts.
Who you decide to marry is one of the most important decisions you can make. Your husband or your wife is the first person that you see in the morning and then the last person you see in the day. So it's fair to say that it says a thing or two about you. That is why this is a story. That is what makes the Instagram likes of Rama Dewaji newsworthy. It's not because of her.
Look at her walking at night on the safe streets of New York. You're welcome, Mayor. Or thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I'm surprised she can do that in Mamdani's Islamic Republic. By the way...
Is that the end of it?
There's 10 more seconds.
Okay, let's listen. Okay. Okay.
Because of who she's married to. And so that was my main question. Is just, does the mayor agree with these sentiments? And he still hasn't answered that.
Probably, and he probably is, and he's righteous to do so.
Get a real job.
I don't know.
The idea that we haven't heard enough from Mayor Mamdani on the question of Israel-Palestine is shocking. I know more. There have been more questions asked of Zohran Mamdani about Israel-Palestine than I would argue any other politician in the country.
And he's never not even elected on to federal office.
Never mind ones that actually have some influence on that, on our policy towards that.
Yeah.
Like, name another candidate in the country that had more questions about that.
Yeah. It's, there was an anti-Islam Islam protest outside of Zohran Mamdani's mayoral residence. Just how many days ago? It was over the weekend.
Yeah, some dumb Nazi.
Now, if she is... Wait a sec. We should say this. If she genuinely feels bad that she doesn't have an opportunity to debate this, this is an open invitation.
Oh, yes.
To Olivia Rheingold. Call into the show or you know, be on the show.
We'll give you the link.
Yeah, we'll give you the link. Be on the show and we can debate this. We can debate the merits of it or how big of a story it is. Like what the implications are. I would say this is even below the story of how come all the snow stuck around in New York after it snowed.
That Islamophobic protest resulted in this bomb that was thrown near. We don't know how. I mean, I think that they arrested two people, but they might have been the counter-protesters.
The counter-protesters, according to the information.
But either way, there was a hate rally outside of Zohran Mamdani's residence based on his ethnicity and his faith. And Jake Tapper and CNN decided that until Trump went too long, that it was important enough to cover Zohran Mamdani's wife's posts
in the midst of an Islamophobic fervor against him that just potentially could have threatened some lives.
Well, to be fair, to be fair, they did a segment. Pull up the CNN segment on Dan Goldman's wife.
I'll keep looking.
Yeah. But, there you go. So. But the good news is that there's nothing else happening in the world.
I mean, it's a synergy between the type of Nazi that went to protest Gracie Mansion and Zionists. This guy, this Fishback guy, who's this griper down in Florida, guess who he used to write for? Barry Weiss's Free Press doing anti-woke stuff. What a shock. How does this keep happening? Almost like there's some hierarchical mindset that people share, even across religions.
Mm.
Let's go for some IM, shall we? Do we have anything else here that really needs to be?
We can save PBD till tomorrow.
Oh, fine. Fine. Oh, we had so much.
Yeah, wow.
The Brian Kilmeade thing is quick and funny.
All right, let's do this. Kilmeade's got a good point. Listen, if you're going to live somewhere, you need to be prepared to get the hell out of there just in case the president starts to bomb. Okay? I mean, come on.
I'm sure these nations love him saying this. Bring a go bag.
Exactly. Here is Fox and Friends. This was last Friday, incidentally. Responding to reports that tons of Americans, and I would imagine European, I mean, tons of people got stuck in these countries that were getting bombed because they got no advance warning that America and Israel were going to start bombing Iran and turn the entire region into a hellscape.
That's on them.
Do so much because you don't want to give away that we're going to attack Iran. The surprise was key, obviously. Number two is... Right. Where were you? Did you notice this unparalleled buildup of a armada at sea, the news that was everywhere in every language? So you do have to take some responsibility. And for Democrats that are outraged that the State Department hasn't done more, are you the same Democrats that watched the fall of Kabul and didn't care that we left thousands behind, our citizens and our allies? And the only we're left behind there.
Okay,
to
pause
die.
It for 1 second. And let's get a drop in on basically started to send back Afghani refugees that came here under the auspices of having worked with us there. So I mean,
disgusting. Yeah.
Just completely disgusting. And hey, wait, why didn't those folks leave Kabul? I mean, it was we had already said we were going to be exiting, right?
Don't you have the PJ on call? It's kind of you're kind of a
if
loser.
If you see this armada building up, guys, that's a key that the attack is coming, even though we have to keep it quiet. We don't want the Iranians to know. We know what? The Iranian military is not going to figure out that armada is there, but you as a citizen or a business person, you should figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the same Democrats that watched the fall of Kabul and didn't care that we left thousands behind, our citizens and our allies, and the only we're left behind there to die? And
allies is a fancy word for asylum seekers.
Took Green Beret and Special Forces to combine on their money, cashing in their 401ks to get him out. Forces. And you're critical of Marco Rubio for not getting all these people out of the Middle East. You do have personal responsibility to a degree.
Some people had to travel for work reasons or they're contract employees in other countries and they're stuck and they just want to get home and get to safety. So they're still Americans, no matter what we'll do whatever it takes to get them home. And yes, it might take some time. And Marco Rubio, to his credit, you normally would have to pay for your way home. And he said, no, we'll pay to get you home. Yeah.
Even
did all that work laying that groundwork there, and you just shot me.
Even in their like defenses. Oh, wait, what? Oh, I'm missing something.
Go ahead. No, go
He's
ahead.
He's doing the kill me.
Fuck it. Go ahead.
That's great by Decoding Fox News. Then zoom in.
Yeah, she zoomed right in. That's very funny.
even in their like defense of this action, they're like the per.
No, you gotta go. You gotta keep talking.
Oh,
come on, Ainsley.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm slow. All right.
Not so easy to be a Fox.
I forget what I was saying.
Yeah. I gotta say that was sort of like when Maren and I were doing Break Room Live.
I'm sorry.
When Maren and I were doing Break Room Live, in the end, he was so mad at me.
Like, yeah, well,
that I could just hear him going. He resented it so much.
The thing is, Ainsley like saved his life there too.
Yeah, like, so dude, you just basically threw all those people.
It's horrible.
There are only viewers. Like, to the extent, like, that's we're up. Yeah. It's not like these, you know. Code Pink is in Dubai. Like,
you know, the part of the story that will really pull at Americans' heartstrings is that a lot of these Westerners who have had apartments in these Gulf states and had to flee them are leaving their pets there. They have pets in their apartments, and there's like an epidemic of people leaving their pets and just fleeing the country. And like we talked about with Juan Cole, like how you ever recover that this sense of safety for any of those states now that are literally just vacation destinations where like Phil Mickelson could go play golf or something like that. People realize like, oh, you can send a drone at these like fancy buildings that they're putting up there.
Someone needs to tell that pet story to some white moms in the middle of the country, and they'll finally turn on Trump.
It's like weapons grade propaganda for Americans.
I genuinely, like, you hear these quotes where Trump's like, could this inspire attacks on Americans on U.S. soil? And he's like, I guess. I mean,
it's true.
I mean, that's...
I'm going to die soon anyway.
Do you think that he cares if somebody, like an American in the Middle East in one of these countries dies? Oh, yeah. No. I actually think they want it. It would give them more of a pretext to keep going.
Oh, yeah. That's the only way the ratings go up on this war. Just... sound like Trump.
I'm not saying that they're trying actively.
Baron,
I'm not
I
saying
got
they're
trying for you. Flag. Hey, Tiffany, we need you to go.
It's all on the table now. It's all on the table. I'm not saying they're actively trying to create a situation where there's a terrorist attack, but would they? Are they doing anything to stop it? Cash Patel's chugging beer every time all day.
Withholding security funds for the World Cup.
Tiffany, you're with the 82nd Airborne right now.
All right, couple IMs. Let's get out of here. Tucker's Beds Bed Demon. I started taking Nutrafol because of you guys. You better expect some angry IMs if I end up like Ben Shapiro. I mean, it's possible. He's without a doubt taking something that is making his hair grow.
You will never have sweat in your eyes
and
ever
again.
It's
just like there must be some thing where like some people... the first hair to grow in your body, you know, like some people, like I, you know, like you take Nutrafol, ear hair. Some people, maybe there's people who just like the first hair that grows is their eyebrows.
Priority follicle.
It's called hypertrichosis, or you know, more commonly werewolf syndrome, where people get like the hair all over us.
No matter what you hear, do not open this door. Ow.
Sweetheart, do not open this door under any circumstances.
It's fantastic.
Where, Ben?
Science is political. I know that shaming a person for their looks is wrong, but I can't take that woman seriously after she did that to her lips. coexistence. Iran Sam. Oh, the coexistence on Sam Subaru. I was wondering if the white smoke over Tel Aviv is an indication they picked a new Jeffrey Epstein. Oh, my God.
Yes.
Jordy, PhD. He's all over the map. Texas Tanky. Because Iran took out so many radars in the area, Turkey has had to start providing targeting data to the U.S. military, but Turkey can't call this a NATO war. Israel will take Turkey down a peg by keeping it embroiled in with a conflict in Iran.
We talked with Akuba coming up on Left Reckoning in here just in a few minutes, but about how they're flying the special kind of plane that is typically only used in nuclear launch situations because all of the it can handle the radar issues that have occurred because all of our radar installations have been knocked out.
Jay Tingle, recall that Yale offered Professor Cole a tenured position in the beginning of the W presidency. The Hunt Oil family pressured Yale to withdraw the offer after his posts about Iran continually exposed the massive lies being generated to lead up to the war. Why do conservatives hate the Ivies? That's true. He was set to for a tenured professor at Yale. And in, as I remember, it was in 2006, and it was very much supposedly tied to his not being aggressively anti-Palestinian enough or something. Mm. Steve Brook, there's a video of about three dozen examples of people on the right saying how saying short-term pain for long-term gain going around right now. Alarming how closely they all stick to the same talking point. Good luck with that. Yeah. Honestly, let's say there are times like where people are, you know, and I know, you know, I saw in the chat, I can't find it now, but when we had Kat on saying, there's a DSA candidate who turns out apparently not to be.
It's DSA recommended. Yeah.
And. But the fact is, we're 7 days out, six days out from an election. That candidate is polling at around 4%.
Yep.
So you have a choice. And this this idea of like people are walking around going like, we need to withstand the short term pain from these oil shocks so that we have a free Iran or whatever they're going to say. The chances of that being effective are just as effective as us saying at this point, 6 days out, you should throw your support to this DSA candidate because you're with a guaranteed going to end up with that guy, Biss, who is to the right of Kat. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying this from your perspective. Like, let's just sort of like, when math presents itself, do not ignore it. I am not a math fan, but when it's so obvious that it's a math problem, then just you go with the math.
But what were they advocating? Not voting for her? Who was it?
I just saw people saying that there was a DSA candidate.
Oh yeah, no, you gotta. I think you gotta make the strategic choice there. And Kat is.
I am wholeheartedly supportive of her campaign.
Definitely.
Gerald from New Orleans, guys, the Ben Shapiro thing was fake. Slop regurgitator gets us all some point, unfortunately. Oh, is that right?
I swear I saw it from his account, but I also saw like four.
All right, we're going to have to do some research. If we made a mistake, we're going to have to pull up the images again and do a correction.
Make it a thumbnail feature.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have to.
Fake.
We were wrong. Noah from Tampa. Legitimately, I forgot the Democratic Party existed this week. Lying is so overpowered. All right. Five more of these. Swing state. When Israel bombed that first hospital in Gaza, they made the exact same claim that Hamas actually bombed themselves. They just swapped Hamas with Iran.
Oh, yes. Don't worry. Matt and I were going at it with people who were taking some of these claims at face value at that time. I remember that very, very vividly. And then Israel went on to bomb every hospital and then just dropped the pretense.
And none of those people who, for instance, called for Rashida Tlaib to be censured ever brought up the topic ever again.
Yeah, well, I mean, what are you going to do? Kentucky boy, please ask Kay, Kat, I assume, about her aggressive stance on China with Taiwan. She has taken a hardline China stance that is concerning.
That did not sound like a hardline China stance to me at all.
Marte, I'm in Kat's district. She's exactly who we need. A great campaign. Go, Kat. Nicola. Emma, we heard it. Very unprofessional, like a dog. I don't know what's a reference to. I love Bernie, but he's a Zionist, so I think that might play into some of his silence. I do expect him to say more on Iran, though, in general.
Bernie, you know, Bernie's old, but he does what he can. Like, you know,
it shouldn't be up to him, frankly. Like, there needs to be new people that step up. And I mean, I frankly don't see it in the Senate.
Jobby Boonier, I'm not sure the interview's assertion that most oil goes to transport is correct. If you include shipping over water and rail and all the co-commitment oil uses in those systems, then perhaps it's accurate. I'm quite sure that that's what he was referring to. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, if you include all of those things, transport, it's like 55 to 60% of oil use. But grid building oil energy use is far greater than vehicular energy use for trucks and cars, which is why EVs alone will not make enough of a dent in emissions. But renewable solarization of the grid could save us. All right, two more. Is that where I'm at? Jeremo, another great show. And what the hell is Twitch? And the final I am of the day. Hey, Trey, Sam, how much does getting bumped from Tapper actually pay? Exactly as much as doing Tapper pays.
Yes. You think we get paid when we go on CNN?
It's exposure, guys.
Oh, I did that signal. Zero.
I'll tell you what. When I filled in for Keith Olbermann, I filled in and did a show. Guess how much I made?
$100.
Zero.
Well, we got to be grateful for the platform. That's what they rely on. I mean,
paid an exposure. That's you get paid an exposure.
Right, right.
And the final I am of the day, right at the last one that we just got. F you. Dizzle McFizzle. Not sure I know exactly what that's about, but I'll take it. Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today. Folks, see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lie.